Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that kiss. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Welcome, this is brother Jay. This is Drew. And in this episode, we are going to discuss the 2013 Robert Redford movie, All Is Lost.
Oh, man, you have, like, actual information about it. I'm impressed.
I do. I actually took a surprising amount of notes. Not as much. Really, just as I was ticking off checkpoints of the movie, just so that I could keep track of where I was, because I know when we start talking about it, I'm going to get lost in what part of the movie it was in. So I kind of have a chronology of what events happened in what order.
Oh, man, I bet the words in your notes are like magnitudes of order more than the amount of dialogue in the movie.
Yes, without a doubt, because I believe there's probably less than 20 words spoken in the whole movie.
This movie is almost like a thought experiment brought to life. Like, is there such a thing as a star so great, a movie star that captures the screen so well that he can be in an entire movie and not say a word and still be compelling.
And not interact with ostensibly another person.
Right.
I mean, he's not acting against anybody else. And before we started recording, you mentioned, you know, this was just like Arctic. But my attitude is this is like Arctic, but just the aquatic version.
Yeah, that's why I opined over text before, during the week while we were watching this, that maybe we should do a double header. But I think you're right. I think both movies probably deserve their own due.
Yeah. Also, I mean, don't get me wrong. I loved Arctic. I look forward to forcing Brother E to watch it. And boyfriend Jesse and I saw it opening night in the movie theater, you know, when people still went to movie theaters, and were blown away. So this, had I seen it in the movie theater, would have had, I think, the exact same impact.
Did Jesse watch this with you?
He watched parts of it. He wasn't home from work yet. And as he walked in, he really wanted to watch it. And I said, You need to sit down and watch this from the beginning. You need to commit the time to it and watch it from start to end, because you're going to do a real disservice to yourself if you just like watch the end of this movie. Because it is, I mean, parts of it are great and parts of it are cringy and parts of it are just ridiculous. But as a vehicle from start to finish, it truly is an amazing movie. At least in my opinion. I mean, I was just absolutely blown away.
My wife started watching this movie with me and she tapped out. Not because she didn't think it was good, but because she thought it was way too stressful. She said, not this year. She's not watching a movie like this year.
It doesn't start bleak, but it certainly gets bleak and then it just maintains bleak. And I think, as we discuss it, I think at no point did I ever think things were going to get better.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk about the ending, because I'm not sure they ever do.
Yeah, and there's some debate about what the ending meant, and so we can talk about the interpretation of what you thought and what I thought and what other people thought. So I'm interested to dive right into it. So let's see. So this movie is starring Robert Redford. He is listed in the credits as our man. He has no name. And his name is never spoken anyway. And he's the only character. There are no other actors in this movie that you see. There are.
Yeah, there's only one disembodied voice briefly, and that's it.
And that's from the radio.
Yeah.
So the movie opens with Robert Redford, our man, on I should go to the synopsis because I'm going to screw this all up.
Well, it wakes up. The movie starts with him waking up to the sound of
water.
Something. Yeah, water. Yeah, water is coming into his cabin on
a
sailboat.
Actually, the movie opens with him speaking his regrets.
Oh, I totally forgot about that. Yeah.
So the actual movie open is you see something, and I didn't know what I was looking at.
It was a Connex, yeah.
Well, but I didn't know that's what it was. I thought it was the underside of a boat. I mean, because really, I don't know what it is. So I'm like, ah. But that's how the movie opens. And then you hear him narrating. And it's him espousing his regrets or his giving credit to whomever that, yes, indeed, maybe this was a bad idea. And then it fades to black and you go 8 days earlier. And so the 8 days earlier, he wakes up and there is water in his boat in the cabin. And there is water pouring in as his boat waves back and forth. And he doesn't seem really panicked, nor does he seem to have any sense of urgency. He kind of has that dazed, like, huh, that's interesting. That really shouldn't be kind of attitude, which... As somebody who's been under extreme stress and panic, I can equate to that. I can totally, absolutely identify with that because there have been times where I've been so panicked where I'm like, "Huh, okay, well, that's a thing." So,
yeah, and he is completely alone, and has been for quite some time. That's pretty obvious. So, any part of his personality that is at all performative is just not being expressed. So he may be panicking, but there's no reason to show it to anybody.
Yeah, and having not known him or his reactions were just kind of along for the ride. Mm-hmm. And
he does not narrate anything.
Nope. Also, you get the impression from him waking up, at least I initially did. I thought, that's a hangover wake up. That's like an alcoholic stupor wake up.
I didn't catch that, but yeah, it's entirely possible.
Because he had that disheveled look when he woke up about him. He wasn't sleeping in his bed, really. He was just kind of passed out. So his appearance and his position, at least from... what I surmised, I immediately just thought he was like, he had had a bender. And I don't know why, maybe that's my own baggage, but that's what I thought. And so he
what
gets,
what else are you going to do at sea by yourself?
I guess. He goes up and he, kind of looks at this hole in the side of his boat where he can see daylight and stuff's going on and he's not sure what's going on. So he goes up out of the cabin onto the deck and he sees a giant shipping container that's rammed into the side of his boat and it's torn a hole in it by the corner of the Connex that's just like crashed into him. So that's a little disconcerting.
Yeah. I mean, just punched right through the fiberglass.
Also, I had no idea that those Connexes would be so airy in channels that they would float.
Yeah, but sure.
Also, I guess you see a little later, it's full of shoes.
Yeah, that made more sense because in the first shot of him waking up, like it looked like a little kid's shoe was floating in towards him.
Yeah, it was very bizarre. I don't know why a Connex full of shoes, but it was a choice. I guess it would have been funnier if it was like a Connex full of rubber duckies or something. But that would have been a different tone to this movie. He gets some gear and basically tries to force the shipping container off the side of his vessel because he's pretty much, they're stuck together at this point.
Yeah, he's stuck, and as the sea is kind of bouncing his ship against the container, he can hear the hull cracking even more.
Which is probably distressing and a bad thing. He does manage to, through, and this movie is full of tension. There is tension everywhere, because he's all by himself, and I just kept expecting something awful to happen constantly. Because, of course, he's... First of all, the title of the movie is All Is Lost, so I'm already expecting something terrible. But also, he's by himself, and he's doing things that I keep thinking, this looks shady. I wouldn't do this if I were by myself, especially in the middle of nowhere, in a place where I could drown. But he just, like, walks across the Connex with a rope, not even really fastened to him. But kind of rope and throws a ties it to the end of the Connex on the opposite end from his boat and throws out some kind of
sea anchor is what it was labeled.
Yeah. So he throws out the anchor and then he pulls the boat away with the Connex anchored in place. And then he I think it's hard to tell, of course, because there's no dialogue, but he kind of sails away a little bit and then. He kind of second guesses himself and then goes back and gets the anchor.
Yeah, and he was angling his ship, it looked like, to see like how much water would actually go in if he was making sharp angles. But yeah, he seemed to like be deliberately dunking the hole into the ocean while he was turning around.
I give credit in the thought of whoever was directing him that and the angle of the boat that they kept the boat, you know, that he at one point he was steering the boat in such a way that the side with the hole in it was higher in the water and the opposite side of the boat was lower in the water. So he was deliberately angling it to keep the water from coming back in. But he goes back and gets the anchor and then you see him kind of... he works on, I think, what is the fiberglass patch kit of some kind, where he's got some glue and fiberglass and some wood that he's got. And he kind of starts working on patching that up. And that takes him the better part of, I gathered more than a couple days, but time is really difficult in this movie.
Yeah, it seemed like a couple days or at least a couple like sleep cycles.
Yeah.
Because it was hard work because he's also trying to manually pump out the water.
Yeah, because it's the fiberglass repair. And then he decides to pull up the radio from the lower deck and kind of rinse it out and air it out and dry it out on the deck.
All of his electronics were waterlogged with salt water.
Including the Panasonic roughbook, which would not have been affected by water, but that's okay. That's why they use them, is because they're impervious to all kinds of bad things like that, supposedly. I don't have one, so I don't know. But if Panasonic wants to give us one, I'm sure we would try one out. Then, as he's kind of drying out the radio, he works on manually sumping the boat and trying to get the water out, which after his great patch job. Good on him that he probably has tennis elbow at that point, but he manages ostensibly to get all the water out, which is impressive because he's got no power really that we can see. So he's all doing this manually.
Yeah, I mean, he spends at least one night in like a hanging hammock because he had to go to sleep when there was still
water.
No, you know, a few inches of water in his cabin.
Yeah. And then he's kind of rooting through his cabin, I think, the next morning, and he finds a book on celestial navigation, which becomes important later on. It was clear that when he found it, it was an important book. So he tries the, I think it's he's down at one point, he's down in the cabin and he hears the radio squawk after he tried it and it didn't do anything, but he hears the radio squawk and he hears voices and he goes back up and tries to call for Mayday and then nothing, it's dead. So his radio's dead again. So that's pretty much no good. And then he decides to go up in the crow's nest to add some kind of short range marine antenna from the upper mast. From the crow's nest.
Oh man, for all of the harrowing parts of this movie, the one that made me like the most physically ill was the shot of him
rappelling down.
No, him looking down while he was going up. Oh god.
You really don't like heights like that?
No. He was so high and he was alone. And, you know, he's hoisting himself up using a pulley system in this, you know, seated harness. And it, just, it looked so precarious. And he was like, he was reaching at like a dad on the ladder angle to try and plug in the antenna. And I was like, ah.
Also, he had a big wrench with a rope attached to it. I assume the rope is so that it would float if it fell in the water. But he at no time does the thing where I would think you would do is where you loop the rope around your wrist so if you drop it, it doesn't fall off your wrist.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, the, you know, the camera strap thing where cameras, really, back in the days when people used cameras, like really expensive cameras have nice camera straps that you have around your neck, because if you dropped your camera, it didn't fall, you know, it would break your neck, but it certainly wouldn't break the camera.
or early cell phones used to have
wrist straps.
The little notch that you could put a wrist strap on it.
Yeah. My Sony candy bar had one of those. So, but yeah, no, when he's up on the crow's nest and he's putting that together, it was panic inducing.
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah.
Also, cause it's windy and the boat's flopping around. And I'm sure that like all things, as you increase in height, things are less stationary when they're high. They tend to be a little more mobile, especially thin metal things.
And this is the kind of movie where he's up at the very top of his mast trying to get some work done. It's already like the most tense part of the movie at this point. And then he looks out and sees this giant storm.
Yeah. Oops. So, and at this point, I was thinking, this is the kind of movie it is. This is the movie where nothing goes right. Mm-hmm. So I should have realized that probably at the point the cargo container had ripped a hole in the boat, and of course the title. But I knew at this point, I'm like, okay. And now I understand where this movie's going. And then I had to stop myself because I didn't want to jump to the end. But I mean, come on, I think we both knew where the movie was going to end. So, but
have you seen the movie Triple Frontier? It's by the same director. I found that movie to, it's not as good as this movie, but I found it to be very enjoyable. It's more like a action movie, but same kind of thing. It's an action movie where there's a lot of tension and shit just keeps going wrong. It's one of those.
So the storm approaches, and he's really, he doesn't have any power. He's trying to sail, but it's stormy. So he heads down into the cabin to kind of figure some things out. He does the great thing where he decides he's going to fill a container up with potable water, which is insightful. I mean, that was a smart thing. He makes some really smart decisions.
Yeah.
Amidst some of the really dumb decisions, but again, I'm not a sailor, and I'm not versed on proper boat etiquette or marine habitry, so I'm going to just defer on that. But
are you suggesting that one of his dumb decisions was waiting until he was right in the middle of the storm to try and put on his storm jib?
That was one of them. Also, why he decided he needed to shave in the midst of that, before he put his foul weather gear on, he shaved. Like, why was that? Why? I don't understand.
That's like a psychological thing, right? Where you try and keep your routine. Yourself neat and tidy and keep the routine so that when you're under stress, you don't You don't act disheveled because you don't look or feel disheveled.
I guess. I don't know. Again, I've not had that kind of panic, so knock on wood. But so he shaves. He puts on his foul weather gear. I think he drags the dinghy around, but then he goes on board with some kind of canopy. I'm not sure I didn't understand what he was trying to do at this point in the movie.
Oh, no, that was later.
Was it?
No, yeah. So the first thing that happens is after he puts on his foul weather gear, he grabs the storm jib, which I don't know what it is. I assume it's like some type of hardened sail to help get through a storm.
Like it went over the front of the boat or something, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, when he was trying to put that on, he got...
like the canopy, because that's when he goes overboard.
Yeah, he got swept overboard. And then he went back down to kind of collect himself. And then when he was in his cabin, the ship like capsized.
They said the term they used is it turtled.
Does that mean when it goes completely on its 180 back.
Yeah.
Into the water?
Yeah. I guess that's the term, is that it turtled. And so, because I think he kind of sensed it was coming and then saw the wave. I think you see the wave through one of the portholes,
mm-hmm.
Which is, by the way, terrifying.
Yes.
And since he can't really steer and he can't really sail and he has no power, he just kind of rolls over. And you know what? This was some amazing cinematography and a pretty good parkour on his part.
Oh, it looked terrifying.
The stove scared me. The stove moving. Mm-hmm. I was just like, oh, it's on an axis and it's moving. And oh, Lord. And I can't even imagine.
Yeah, it's like it swivels to keep level, right?
Yeah. Oy. You just hope it's strong enough not to fall. So, mm-hmm. but again, I imagine in sailboats such as those, you kind of plan for that horrible emergency. So maybe, you know, it's engineered so that it won't fall out. But again, I would want to be far, far away from that. Also makes the good point that you'd always keep a very clean ship, because the last thing you want is your kitchen knives falling from suddenly the ceiling.
Right.
So, but yeah, the boat rolls over, and he's upside down for a while, which is terrifying when you think about it, because he looks mm-hmm. down and he can see he sees downward into the water.
Yeah, he sees his mast, in the water.
Like he's a glass bottom boat all of a sudden.
But then it writes itself, and he goes outside.
Yeah, and then it writes itself, and he goes up, and there are no more sails.
Well, it flips again, right?
Yeah.
And he has to swim back and grab the boat before it flips back over, which at that point the mast had been completely torn down.
Oh, just... amazing through all this, his patch held.
Yep, until this point,
all right? The pressure differential, the boat turning upside down, and the air pocket and the water. And I mean, that's some pretty good. I mean, if true, that is patch held. And that's when his head hits a post.
Yeah,
and that was just like, oh, you know what? I know it wasn't real, but it felt real. It looked real and sounded real. Mm-hmm. And his reaction was adequate. somebody who's hit their head, I'm
Well, the initial reaction is the movie cuts to black.
Yeah. And so he wakes up with lots of water in the cabin now.
It's making me really tense just to talk about this, by the way.
It was tense. The whole movie's mm-hmm. tense. He finally reawakens after his head injury, and there is a new hole in another part of the boat. And there is water pouring in. And so it's really hard to read him, but it looks like he's now resigned to the fact that he has to get off the boat. Because he's just kind of like, oh, all right.
He's bleeding and concussed, and his ship is sinking.
and he gets the raft, and he kind of throws the raft out, goes back to the boat, to the wreckage. It's full of water. He starts...
He spends the night in the raft with it tethered to the boat, right? He actually, goes to sleep and then wakes up in the morning and just sees this wreckage that he's tied to.
Yeah.
By the way, when his ship was destroyed like this, I did a time check, and there was still, 45 minutes left in the movie.
Yeah.
And I did not understand how that was possible, because I thought at this point all was lost. But no.
Oh no. No. It also almost makes you think Frank Darabont was involved in this somehow. So
it's brutal.
Just because it's like, you know, as the audience, and granted, I was the audience of one, but this movie is punishing. It is punishing to watch.
Yes, it is.
Because you are powerless to do anything, and so is he. It's tension inducing and frustrating and harrowing and just, ugh. Yeah, so he was in the raft, then he goes back to the boat, which is now very much in distress. It is wrecked and full of water. It is barely afloat, I think, at this point. And he kind of salvages some food. He pulls his tank of salvaged water. He does this thing, though, where he kind of keeps gathering stuff. And I started panicking because I'm like, you know what? I would have gotten my food and water, gone back to the raft, and then come back and got some more stuff and gone back to the raft, because you really don't know how long that boat's going to stay up. And for me, so far, with his luck, at least it would have been me, my luck hasn't been so good so far. I'm not going to take the chance that I'm going to try and get greedy and get too much stuff off and have it sink while I still have everything in one basket, as it were. But
not only that, even if he had done that, he was going back and really tickling the dragon's tail while his raft was still tethered to this sinking ship. I was positive the ship was going to go down and take the raft with it.
Funny you say that. At the very beginning of the movie, I thought the cargo container was going to take the boat down to the bottom. I was convinced in the first 10 minutes. I'm like, oh, this is the kind of movie it's going to be. So luckily I guessed wrong. I guessed wrong about what was going to take the boat down. But I had a similar train of thought that you did. I thought, oh, he needs to not tie that raft to the boat because it's going to sink. I mean, I think that's the thing about this movie. You know what's going to happen and you still aren't sure what's going to happen. And I was still surprised at what happened, even though I knew what was going on. I don't know if that made any sense.
I mean, this movie is not necessarily unpredictable once you understand what kind of movie it is. But it's done so well that even if you guess right, it is still harrowing to experience.
Yeah. No, it's bleak. It's bleak. He goes back to the boat a final time, although we don't know it's the final time yet. But he's basically lavaging his open wound and putting some butterfly strips and trying to fix his wound in his head as it are. Which, by the way, was just... again, more cringing. I know it was fake.
It was gruesome.
It was gruesome. It was tough too. Which really is a testament, again, even though, you know, he's a man of a few years. But his acting was still, I mean, I never didn't think he was the sailor. I never didn't think he was our man. I never saw him as Robert Redford, which was good, I think. I believed in the story. Although, again, he was the only character, so hard not to. But he fixes up his head, and then the ship just gives up. That's it. There is no more ship, and it starts completely... it's buckled under the pressure, or the immense water, or all of the above. So it's goodbye to the Virginia Jean.
And one of the last things he grabbed was this really heavy box
that he pried out from one of the lower stowage areas.
Mm-hmm.
A completely waterlogged cardboard box that's completely submerged in water. that, by the way, is completely dry later. But never mind that. By the way, I wrote down "Goodbye, Virginia Jean" to the tune of "Candle in the Wind." So, but back on the raft, this is where he pulls the box out, and inside the cardboard box, it is no longer wet. A completely dry sextant case. Very pretty. Yeah. Very pretty box. And then I thought, okay, he has a sextant, but I appreciate that you're going to use that with celestial navigation to kind of figure out where you are. But he can't steer the raft. So I'm thinking, what? Why? So just so he knows where he is? I wasn't understanding the importance of knowing where he was, because it didn't get on the map. Until later on in the movie, I figured out that it was because he was trying to figure out when he was going to be in a shipping lane.
Yep.
Which, again, I mean, I picked up on that. I was like, oh, that makes, I mean, again, he makes some really good choices on top of some really bad choices. But then we start getting these really gorgeous shots, underwater shots of sea creatures around his raft, which started to give me anxiety.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't even mentioned this movie is beautiful. Like the shots, the scenery, it looks so good. I mean, even though it was really anxiety inducing when he was up in his harness at the top of the mast, and he looked out and saw the storm coming, like just from like a scene of nature, it was beautiful.
They one of the pieces of trivia in the notes say that they used the bungee cord rule when they were filming, that they basically couldn't be more than a bungee cord length away from him almost at all times, which is why all of the shots are very close in. But because he was the only character and they wanted you to pay attention, I guess, you know, and give you that sense of claustrophobia, I guess. I'm not sure what they were going for, but that was an intentional choice by their filming style, is that they wanted everything was only, you know, they kept it very close in.
I mean, it's about as close as you can get without being like a full on like POV shot.
Yeah. And you're right. It's beautiful. I mean, there's just some gorgeous shots. And these shots, these underwater shots are gorgeous too. They're kind of terrifying at times, but they're gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And then this is how this movie goes. Now there's water in the raft.
Yeah.
And so like, oh, that's just one more thing. And
So now he's just drifting and tracking his location on the map, and he's trying to do some stuff. Like he tries to fish at one point. Yeah, I mean, this is probably like the most relaxing part of the entire movie.
Yeah. Before he hits another storm, and water in the raft, another storm, and I put a question mark, and then I put, oh yes, another storm, of course, and then followed by he screams the word fuck, which I wrote, it took him long enough. God, he's way more patient than me. Like,
well, yeah, because I mean, he has to survive another storm in this little life raft. And during the course of that storm, you bring up a good point. It's like a microcosm of his experience on the boat. It starts off with water in the raft. And then once he fixes that, then he encounters a storm, which flips over his raft. And so in the middle of the storm, he has to unzip the canopy and go outside and swim and pull the raft over and then get himself back in.
And at this point, I'm panicking because I'm thinking he's going to unzip the raft and everything he owns is going to fall to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
And I'm just because he's not really being super careful, ostensibly, in the raft. He's not really securing and stowing things. You know, could be shock, could be resignation, could be lazy, could be alcohol withdrawal. I mean, I don't know any of these things. But
man, you're really hitting the alcoholism hard.
Well, because earlier in the movie, after he gets the patches done, remember, he sits down with that giant bottle of booze and has a drink. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have just a little drink. He has a huge drink. And then he follows it up with another one. And then he seems a lot, you know, it doesn't seem like he's intoxicated just as much as he seems like, I'm no longer having DTs. Right?
Again, that's funny. I didn't pick up on that.
I might be projecting. You know, I could be. Maybe a little sensitive, but
yeah. But after he survives the storm, that's when he realizes that his water container had been open while it was flipped over and submerged.
The air tap was left open, so even though he had filled it with fresh water, by virtue of it sitting in the boat flooded with seawater. And osmosis being what it is. Yeah. So he has no water that he can drink, which is a big bummer.
And that's when he screams, fuck.
And then he
looks really despondent for a little bit.
Yeah.
Before he pulls his shit together.
And so he makes this makeshift evaporator condenser, which I call total bullshit on, by the way. It would have taken a tremendous amount of time to get any condensate of water of any appreciable. I mean, really, I don't know.
Well, it didn't look like he ever got too much.
No, but even still, but I give him credit. I mean, it's you know, it was a good attempt on his part. Again, you know, the desperate acts of a desperate man in desperate times, right? So you do what you have to. And then that's when I realized, oh, he's headed for a shipping lane. And then there's a cargo container ship that comes by. And even with the flares, it misses him. And that's like total punch to the balls right there. It's just like...
It made me so angry.
I think it's supposed to.
Yeah. They reminded me again of parts of Arctic that just made me... so angry.
That's the mark of a good movie, isn't it, though?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's where our boyfriend Jesse had come in at one point. He's like, why wouldn't they see him? I'm like, well, on those big cargo ships, they're all going to be... They don't care. They're not looking at anything on the ocean. They're in their cabins or they're in the deck, and they're not looking. They don't need to look. Right. They're in a shipping lane. You know, they're not going to see some little dude, and they're not going to be looking anyway.
They've got equipment to warn them of stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, he said, well, wouldn't there be people down on the decks? And I said, well no, because nobody's going to be where the shipping containers are, because that's dangerous. So you don't want to be anywhere around there. So they're just all going to be up. So then he starts smart fishing with the little loop. He makes the little loop of his fishing gear. He loops the fishing wire around a support strap in the raft and ties the other end. Domestic squabble?
A cat getting into the garbage.
Oh, okay. I couldn't see. I just hear it. So he loops the fishing wire around the support rope, one of the support straps of the raft, and ties the other end of it to his hat. And so he catches a fish in it, so it's flopping around and basically tugging and moving his hat, which he's in a daze at this point. And then he's like, ooh, he kind of comes out of it for a minute and he's like, oh, fish. So he goes to grab the line and he's like, oh, I've got a fish. He's so happy.
He was going to eat that fish raw, wasn't he?
Oh, yes. It was going to be like the snake from Capricorn 1. You didn't see it.
So. I did not watch that movie. No.
Yeah. James Brolin just like slits a snake open and eats it.
Nice.
So he's like, I gotta have a fish. He's pulling it out on the fishing wire. And then a shark just grabs it. Because that's the kind of movie this is. Mm-hmm. Although he has the appropriate response, which is, I think, to recoil and decide he doesn't need the fish that much.
Right. And then we get another one of those under the boat shots. Which shows sharks circling the crap out of him.
And the Jaws-like music. I don't know if you picked up on that.
not specifically, but
if you go back and listen to it, it's very Jaws like.
The score to this movie is very effective at amplifying the anxiety throughout the whole movie.
I would agree with that. So he's pretty much screwed at this point, out of water, out of food, kind of just not happy, kind of, you know, resigned. And there's another vessel comes by.
Surely there can't be two ships that miss him.
Yeah. And it does. Misses him. Little tiny yellow raft in the ocean. And they have an overhead shot now of the raft in the ocean. At which point I almost had a panic attack. Because this is my nightmare. Like, little teeny tiny raft in the middle of nowhere. Literally in the middle of nowhere. That there's land and you are in a raft. That's it. And I almost had to completely just walk away from the movie because I was going to throw up. I was like, oh, I can't handle this. And so then I think at this point he's pretty resigned in his fate, I believe, from his appearance. And he decides...
Yeah, well, this is when he writes out his note.
Yeah, he puts his message in a pickle jar. He writes out, I assume is what the narrative from the opening of the movie is what was written here.
Yeah.
He writes out a note, and he places it in the pickle jar and he throws it overboard. If you can call a raft overboard, but the term fits, I suppose. So somebody will find the note? Question mark. I'm not sure. You know, water currents being what they
are. Nobody's ever finding
that note.
All
the plastics in the ocean. Yeah, it's gone.
Fucking shark's gonna eat it.
And then we have another ship, right?
At night, right?
Mm-hmm.
Way off in the distance.
Way off in the distance. And so he does something that immediately, as soon as I see it start happening, I'm like, oh, this is not a good idea. Like, I understand why he's doing it. But this is not a good idea. Like, this is only going to end up bad.
He's out of flares.
Yeah. So he uses his condensing container, which is a plastic jug of some form, like a jerry can kind of thing, right? That he's cut the side off of to collect condensate in. And he throws a bunch of his paper from his notebook in it and sets it on fire. And then at one point, he just throws a whole notebook in there. But I'm thinking... The heat generated from that is going to melt that plastic anyway, right through the bottom of the raft.
Yep.
Just the heat. Not even the flames, just the heat alone. Like, this is a bad idea. And as soon as I realized that, then I said, oh, so he's going to have a melted raft or a giant melted raft or a fiery raft or perhaps just a big funeral pyre. I didn't realize how correct I was until... The whole raft goes up in flames.
Yep. Which again is beautiful.
Yeah.
Because it's in the black of night and there's this huge fire. And...
Yeah. It is pretty. I mean, it's amazing. That's what my background shot right now is the underwater shot from the raft and the moon. But, it appears that the boat still does not see him, even with the fire. And he treads water for a little while and then... either he doesn't have the strength or he gives up. And this is at the point.
I thought he gave up.
I don't know. At this point, though, we realize it's not his real hair. It's really not his real hair. Not even close to his real hair. It barely even looked like him. It looked like a Val Kilmer version of him. And then I wrote, this is Arctic, but in the ocean.
Yes, it is.
Then the ending of the movie, which is... He sees an approaching vessel, he believes, with a light shining towards
He sees the a light.
Fire. And he is ostensibly drowning at this point, but decides to swim back up to the surface for the light in the hand. And the last part of the one of the parting shots of the movie is he's grabbing the hand.
But it's not real, right?
Well, that's the debate. Is that the hand of God? Or is that really, is he really being rescued?
This is 100%. I mean, he goes towards the light. I mean, just the angle of the hands. It's the iconography of the Sistine Chapel, right?
I didn't write it. I don't know. I'm just saying. It's up for debate. There was a moon, so it could be moonlight that you're seeing. I don't know.
No. I think he died.
You think he died? Well,
I think he died.
You know, so be it. I don't think there's any right or wrong answers. So, yeah. This movie. First of all, it was budgeted at $8.5 million. It made $14 million. So, it did make a return on the investment. Not a lot, but, I mean, considering that there's only one actor, I don't know how much expense they had. They consumed three ships for the destruction of the... I've already forgotten the name of the boat.
Was it the Jean Marie? Virginia Jean?
Virginia Jean. Robert Redford's, one of his biggest complaints was that he was constantly wet. And that got old really quickly.
I bet. Yeah, he looked like it.
He got a really bad ear infection from all the water at one point, and he's lost a bunch of hearing one of his ears because of it.
Oh. How many actors do you think could have pulled this off?
No, I don't think a lot. I think it depends on also how they play the character. I think Robert Redford does serious but focused really mm-hmm. well. I can see this being really schlocky in the hands of a lesser actor and/or comedian.
Yeah, I mean, this entire movie is less is more, right? Because he almost underacts yes. throughout the entire movie. But he is still compelling because he has such charisma and screen presence. And even though he does some dumb things, you are still rooting for him. Desperately rooting for him
yeah.
throughout the whole movie.
And he also has that I can only speak from our father because I only know, I really only have had one dad. So, but he has that kind of that immovable, unstoppable force where, all right, well, this shit thing happened, so I'm going to go on and do this thing. And, oh, this thing should happen because of that one. I'm going to still go out and do this thing. It's like he never really gives up. Like, he as bleak and as just as gut-wrenching or as debilitating or demoralizing, like, oh, well, like, all right, that happened. I'm still going on. Like, every point in the movie where it's just like, God, like, why can't I just have a break? He doesn't do that. I mean, he may do that internally, or he may emote a little bit, but he still keeps going. He's like, he's always on to the next thing. And I think that's what part of the really compelling performance is you see mm-hmm. that in the acting. You know, his body language and his demeanor and the way he flows through his actions. Yeah, he's not thrilled, but he's like, nope. This is what I have to do. I'm going to have to do this now, so I'm going to do this. This is what I have to do. That's what I'm going to have to do now. You know, I've got to grab cans of food now. I'm looking at the cans. Does it really matter? I'm going to throw the cans in the backpack. I need the cans. Better grab a spoon and fork. They're underwater here. So all of this, like, it seems really little, but all these things are necessary.
Yeah, and you're right. He does keep going until the very end when he realizes that he has now drifted beyond the shipping lane and he has no food and not really enough water to sustain him. And he lights his raft on fire and gives up.
Yeah.
I mean, it really has to be an actor with a very specific type of gravitas and screen presence, because he doesn't give you anything other than watching him do stuff, to get you on his side. And if it was somebody like, the other sailing movie was Dead Calm. If it was somebody like Sam Neill. I don't know that he could have pulled this off. Mm-mm. And if it was Billy Zane, you'd be actively rooting against him.
Yeah, this is also true. So let's go with the other movie where there's implications of death and silence. Tom Hanks. Could he have pulled this off?
Not in this way. I mean, yeah. he was really good in Castaway, but he was manic the whole time, and he was talking, and he created a friend for himself so he could have, you know, this kind of fake dialogue. I don't know that he could have been stoic like this and been as compelling.
Yeah.
Who I think would have been really interesting if we'd gotten a chance to see him a little bit older, like somebody like Philip Seymour Hoffman. I think he could have done it.
I can see that. What about a Daniel Craig?
I don't know. I think Robert Redford is handsoming in like a really warm and welcoming kind of way. And I think Daniel Craig is handsome in more of a kind of snobbish kind of way.
Robert Redford was 77 when they shot this. And his his comment was, the most grueling aspect of the shoot was not the stunts, most of which he did himself, but the dismal daily routine of just being perpetually waterlogged. When it was screened out of competition at the Cannes Film Festival in 2013, it received a 9-minute standing ovation.
I believe it.
It says this is the only movie in the 100-plus year history of the international filmmaking that has only one actor and one writer-director, but 11 executive producers, as well as six other producers of varied titles.
So that means anybody who invested any money got an executive producer credit? Is that how that works?
Yeah. The Chinese character shown on the shipping container, which was supposed to be the name of the shipping company in the beginning, actually mean good fortune. This is all from the trivia section of IMDb, so I don't know how much accuracy this holds, but still. Filmed almost entirely without recorded live sound. Local sounds of water and wind were sampled for reference at the end of each daily shoot.
Oh, wow. They added all the sound in later?
That's what this says.
That's crazy.
Oh, so yeah, here. The director adhered to what he termed his bungee cord rule, a general shooting principle whereby the camera could not be above, below, or farther from Redford than a cord could be stretched. Furthermore, in an effort to create a claustrophobic first mate intimacy between the audience and the subject, they filmed extensively within arm's reach of Redford using a 32mm lens on his Alexa camera.
That's a very good term, because especially when he was in his raft with the cover up, it felt extremely claustrophobic.
I thought most of it felt claustrophobic. Three yachts were destroyed for this.
Yeah, you sent me a little shot of the credits where they thanked the sacrifice of the boats.
Yeah, nice tribute. I mean, because they destroy them.
Mm-hmm.
So. Not much else to say about this movie. I don't know who else we would cast in this movie. You know, actually, now I think about it, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch.
He'd be interesting.
It would be a different movie.
Yeah, he's not nearly as likable.
Okay, so how about we just go completely for broke, Mads Mikkelsen?
Well, I think he demonstrated pretty effectively that he could pull this off.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe he should remake it, and we should just see a series of movies like this with him.
I don't want to, man. This is one of those movies where
it's almost the Schindler's List effect. It's really good, but you never want to see it again.
And I can only recommend it conditionally. Like, it's a really good movie. I think you should watch it. You're going to be miserable.
Yeah, I think this is. I think it's a great movie. I really do. I'm gonna go out and say this is an A+ movie as far as I'm concerned. Also, because it's Robert Redford, and I adore Robert Redford. So, I think this is just kind of a. It's nice. It's nice to see that he still has all that acting ability and skill, and just the solid charisma that he can just push right out through the lens. So I think the movie's great for that. But also just for the whole environment is just amazing. But it is definitely one of those movies where I watched it once. I don't know that I'll watch it again. But I would definitely recommend it. But I would also say that probably don't watch this if you're having a bad week, and especially if you've had a bad day. This is the movie you want to watch maybe when you're done, you can go out into some sunshine.
Yes. Yeah. We talked about it a little bit when we did 3 Days of the Condor. Like, Robert Redford, he's not, like, the best actor, but he is a premier movie star. He always commands the screen. Oh, okay. So, yeah, here's the question. So, when I think of, like, just outright movie star, you know, somebody who is compelling even when you want to not like them, do you think Tom Cruise could have pulled this movie off?
I don't think so. Because I don't think, I think the problem with Tom Cruise is that I think he would have over dramatized it. I think he would have overacted it, and it would have become, it would have looked forced or frantic. And I think the point of this movie is if our man had become frantic, he would have never made it as long as he did. You know, he'd never really panicked. He stayed calm, and yes, yes, there were some moments where he was like, oh, shit, but he never really lost it. And I think a Tom Cruise, I don't think, I think at this point in his acting career, he would not be complicit enough in the acting experience where he would allow himself to not push his own acting. So I think he would overact it right into farce.
I 100% agree. I don't think he could have pulled off the charismatic stoicism.
Yeah. I mean, I can see his frantic, I mean, in my mind's eye, I can see it. Like, I can see Tom Cruise doing it, but it being like this frantic, appropriately enough, the soundtrack in my head right now is Mission Impossible. So, you know, I see this like Mission Impossible kind of panic.
Yeah. He may not have to speak, but he would make you feel what he was doing.
Yeah. And I think in some ways having him not speak would be worse. So just, you know, just one man's opinion. So yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else. Maybe a female actor. Is there any really good female stars that could have pulled this off? I mean, we're talking about dudes, but there's plenty of women that would be just as capable, right?
I think something like this would be really interesting with like Charlize Theron.
Or like Tilda Swinton.
Yeah, she's a little bit too weird. But who knows? She may just create an entirely new persona that we've never seen of her and pull that off.
Yeah. Definitely not a Meryl Streep, though. And Helen Mirren's probably a little too old. Although maybe not. I mean, Robert Redford was 77, right? So, I don't know.
I've got a wacky one that I'm sure nobody will agree with.
Morgan Freeman.
No, if we're talking about ladies, Jennifer Lawrence. Did you ever see her in Winter's Bone?
Yes.
Yeah, she was really good. She was pretty stoic in that.
Winter's Bone was about the murder in the swamp, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yes, I saw it. Like the murder in the swamp and the psychic, is that what that was about?
No, are you thinking of the Gift?
Yeah, I'm mixing movies. But no, I have seen Winter's Bone. So I don't know. I think that...
I don't think she's done a really good movie in a while, but I think she could pull it off.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting thought experiment, certainly. So, yeah, I'm trying to think, like, maybe a Bryan Cranston.
He is... I think his Walter White is too iconic.
See him in his skivvies on the boat. Eric won't get that reference.
Yeah, I don't think you could. It would always be him doing some other version of Walter White, I think.
Well, that's unfortunate. But, was it worth it?
This is definitely worth it. This is a fantastic movie. Again, everyone should watch it. You will not enjoy it.
No, I think you'll enjoy it. I just think you will not feel good after.
No, it's, it's...
Because I enjoyed it. I mean, it was a good movie. I didn't feel good after it, but it was a good movie because it made me emote, it made me feel, and I wanted to see the end, even though, again, realistically, from the beginning of the movie, we know where it ends. So...
It was exhausting, but not in a way that I could actually go to sleep after I watched it.
I would agree with that. Because you have all that tension and nothing to do with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It also makes me never want to be on a ship ever.
Yeah.
Ever. Like, oh, go on a cruise ship. Nope, I'm good. You know why? Because cruise ships have catastrophic things happen too. And I have that kind of luck. So, no, I'm good. Of course, I don't imagine there's a lot of cruises right now. So,
I hope not.
Then next week, it is Brother E and I, and we are going to do another Robert Redford movie.
Oh, which one?
I have forgotten already. one moment. I have it.
It's supposed to be your pick.
I did. I picked it. I gave Eric three choices. Sorry, this is riveting to no one.
Oh, he's already.
Oh,
Big Jewel greened us out.
I gave him four choices: The Core, The Discovery, The Foreigner, or The Command. Notice my pattern.
Mm-hmm.
They're all on Netflix, and he picked The Discovery, which has Robert Redford.
Never heard of it.
Robert Redford and Rooney Mara. I want to say.
So it's recent.
2017. The Discovery, 2017. Jason Segel, Rooney Mara, Robert Redford.
Oh, okay. That's I know that one. Somebody figures out that there actually is an afterlife, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Have you seen it?
I have not. I'm aware of it, though.
That he chose that. I gave him four movie choices, all of which started with the. So I thought that was funny. So, and they're all one word, the's. So. Again, the choices were The Core, The Discovery, The Foreigner, or The Command, and he picked The Discovery.
So. Is The Foreigner with Jackie Chan?
Pierce Brosnan. It's Pierce Brosnan and Jackie Chan.
Interesting.
Pierce Brosnan is Liam Hennessy.
I have not seen it.
I haven't either. It's on my list, though. I've added all those to my list. So so next week will be The Discovery. So, but on that note, we will talk to everybody next week, and I will stop recording.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on Films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on Films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.